This episode of Django Chat is sponsored by TalkPython and their new HGMX courses. The link's in the show notes and we'll tell you more about them later.
Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Will Vincent, joined by Carlton Gibson. Hello, Carlton.
Hello, Will.
And we are joined...
Go ahead.
What are you, Tim?
I was going to say, I've always been curious how that gets recorded. Like, is that like actually recorded or is that all live? Like, then seeing the pause in there, like this is...
Yeah, we do it live.
We do it live.
Yeah. Yeah. Bill O'Reilly style. We do it live. This is great. Yeah, I don't know if we want to keep this in or not, but anyways, let's keep it.
This week we've got with us Tim Schilling. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing great. Like the first time I met you, I just want to point out because like that little bit of surrealism was in San Diego and going to dinner, and I'm just sitting out there in the front, and you two come by, and you're like, "Oh, you want to go to dinner?" And end up in the back of a van with both of you, and I'm just looking around, what is going on here? So now seeing the actual recording of it, it was kind of cool.
Sorry to interrupt. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. We want to talk about DjangoCon US because you were an organizer. Carlton and I spoke. It was a couple days ago. And I just wrote up a little recap. Maybe I'll put in the show notes. But I've been thinking about, you know, first conference, second conference. I think this is sixth or something for me. And I vividly remember the first one I ever went to was in San Diego. It was there 3 years total. So... but that first year, didn't know anyone, you know, you're sort of milling around in the evening, like, I don't have any friends. And then people just appear in the lobby and often it's like, yeah, let's go to dinner somewhere. So it's very organic and very, very friendly in a way that other tech conferences aren't as much.
Yeah, I have no idea what other tech conferences are like. I just know I was walking down the hallway and Carol Gantz recommended, hey, go down to the lobby. You'll find people to eat there. So I did that, and yeah, everything kind of was great after that. So once I learned that superhero trick.
So was that your first, before we talk about this year, was that your first entry into sort of like the wider Django community there, Tim?
Yes. Yeah, it was. I was trying to think of a different one, and no, it's really that.
Which year was that? Was that 20?
That was 22. 22. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Yeah.
So you get off to a flying start.
Yeah, you kind of stormed onto the scene. So, I know. Yeah. You just show up.
Yeah,
I had
a plan. I kind of had a plan coming into it. And then Kojo had his orientation where he's like, hey, know what you're here for. And so did some quick reflection and tried to make the best of it and just dove both feet in and haven't really looked back.
It's amazing that you've only been really in like active in the community for those 2 years then, because it seems like you're everywhere and involved in everything and being massively. So that's just super. What a great effort.
Yeah, I mean, it started back in like 2000. Like, so I was answering questions on Stack Overflow for many years, and then the forum, and then the Discord, and then I became a moderator of Discord, and then then it was really the 22 DjangoCon US conference, and then DjangoNaut Space and Defna and an organizer. Yeah, so everything kind of just snowballed. But yeah, I've kind of been around on the edges, just not as deep into it as I am right now.
And you meant 2020, right? I mean, because you don't look like you've been involved since 2000. You're a bit younger than us.
No. Yeah, sorry. 2020. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so DjangoCon, one of the things is everyone has a different experience. There's the first time experience. There's this speaker experience. But there's also the organizer experience. Maybe you could touch upon that. You know, how did you get involved? What is that like? Because I know... from talking to, you know, Jeff Triplett specifically, who helped run it for years, it's just wildly different when you're behind the scenes making things happen as opposed to, you know, just showing up.
Yeah, I didn't really process this until I just, Lacey Henschel did an interview with Jay Miller and I just watched it recently. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how her perspectives on DjangoCons have changed, where like originally she was there for like the technical talks. And then as she became more involved in the organization, like that's where she ended up skewing to. And I realized like that is exactly what happened this year. I the first 2 years I had pages and pages of notes from every single technical talk. This year, not so much. Trying to manage like the organization side of things and keep up with the communication, check and make sure that everybody else is having the conference that they're intending to have. Kind of you have to take that from somewhere. That focus has to come from somewhere. And so a lot of it's like that deep thinking during the talks. So now I'll have to go back and rewatch them and really consider like what they were. So there were a couple that stuck out, but like those were like more of the emotional ones. Some of the technical ones were a little bit harder for me to grok fully. But yeah, other than that, like it was great. It this year went a lot smoother for me than last year. I took some advice and tried to step back and not do so much. So that was really nice. We were able to do a couple of new things that I'm proud of. There's the interviews that I just referenced. Nathan Zieger was helping organize those, and we'll be releasing those over the next couple of weeks. And I'm really excited about those. And then we had the hackathon this year. Yeah, there was a bunch of new things that we added that were pretty cool.
I remember I just wrote up my recap, and a lot of it is not focusing on the talks. I mean, it is a little bit because I want to link to them later, but it becomes, I remember my first year, I felt like I had to go to every single talk, go to every single thing. And so I ended up staying inside for like 3-4 days. People were like, what was San Diego like? And I was like, I don't know. Like I took airport to here and then I basically didn't leave. And then the next year, I think that's when Carlton, you and I
We biked down to the sea every morning.
Yeah, because E. Durbin had, I'd seen he had done that. I was like, wow, like that's a good idea. So we went out in the mornings, and then now I feel like I'm almost like at the other extreme where writing up my recap, it seems like nothing but, you know, walks and coffees and then a little bit of the talks. But I think that's because the talks, I still went to a lot of talks, but I know that I can see them online after, and it's about meeting people, and it's also about pacing yourself and not being overwhelmed by everything.
I think as well, like you might from the technical talks, you might pick up some sort of high level strategic things, but the sort of lower level tactical things, you've got to rewatch the videos and, you know, you're not going to capture those as the talks are going on. I mean, well, you might, but that's hard work.
Well, no, I was like you, Tim. I have like pages and pages of notes for my first DjangoCon because it was like, you know, being in grad school, but I don't know if I knew that the talks were going to be, I don't think I knew the talks were going to be online later, or somehow it didn't click for me that I could just absorb it and then, yeah, go back and and dive in later. Like it wasn't going to completely. And so now actually that's what I do. I try to make a point of watching basically every talk from DjangoCon Europe and US. And then I have like a whole notes section because otherwise I'm not going to remember anything, but then I can be like, oh, what was that talk? You know, what was that code snippet? And yeah, it's a lot, makes everything a lot more enjoyable, and you don't feel like you have to write things down or you'll forget it.
One of the technical talks I really enjoyed though was Ryan Cheeley's air culture one. Mm-hmm. That one hit pretty close to home. Like I was there with a couple of employees, and afterwards we were talking about like, yeah, we might have a few of those that we're just kind of letting smolder for a bit here.
I've not got too much done since I came home, but I have been turning off a few of those and tweaking them, and like, oh, I'll create an issue for that rather than just having it every day. Oh yeah, that's still life.
Well, that's the benefit of a break, right? You come back and certain things like, I should really do something about these, you know, ongoing things that bug you. So yeah, we had Jeff Triplett and I run the Django News newsletters, which we put out during the conference, or tried to, and it was having one of its periodic issues on Friday. And so I think it was a combination of like being tired, being home, new. He and I are both ready to just like rip it all up and switch to some other platform. And we came out with a new perspective. There's some things that might be changing there.
That's fun.
Well,
of course, other platforms are always bug free, right?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like a murder mystery. I don't know. Maybe I'll tell the story another time with how it all plays out. But there's some interesting things with how, curated and other things. Carlton knows. I've complained to him about it. But we'll see how it all shakes out. But we got someone. We were like, is this a zombie project that we've been using for 5 years and paying like real money to? And we found someone involved. And yeah, when I sort that all that out, we'll tell that tale. But, you know, the point is you come at it these everyday things and you're like, you know, maybe we should do it differently.
Yeah. That's a big one to change though for a project. Like,
well, okay. Well, not really. I mean, we have the email addresses. Like we don't, it would be as simple, you know, I actually already moved it over to to something else, but it would just be about giving the Django knots access and be a little bit of a hassle, but it's not that, like, there's no payments that go through it because we have sponsors, like that's all separate. So, you know, it's weighing up the annoyance of change versus the annoyance of 3 times in 6 months, a newsletter not going out. And then this time, at least, though, Jeff and I both wrote some pretty frustrated emails for us. And we actually got a response. And then, found out that trying to figure out the ownership structure of it right now, which when I have that nailed down, I'll talk about it. But
yeah, I'm always shocked whenever people send like, hey, Django newsletter is amazing. It's great. And then Jeff responds back with, well, I didn't even realize like people have read it that much. I'm just sitting there like, no, this is fantastic. This is a really core piece of our community that's required almost at this point. So,
yeah, well, that's the benefit of DjangoCon, right? Is all these digital friends and colleagues you get together and you hear just a couple token. Hey, thanks for organizing the conference, Tim. Like, thanks for all these packages. Thanks for helping out. Right. I mean, you don't get that, right? I mean, GitHub stars or listens, I can speak for the podcast, like Carlton and I, every once in a while we get an email or something, but absent Django cons, it's almost like it doesn't exist beyond the people we're interviewing, right? Because it's like, oh, I see some numbers, but I don't know, unless someone says something. Same thing with a newsletter, right? It's just like, okay, I mean, I see that it goes to thousands of people, but until someone says something, it might as well not.
So I've got a question for both of you then. Along that vein, like, how important are Django cons to the Django community?
Okay. I just think they're utterly essential. Like, I often tell the story of how I kind of really got deeper into Django. I was using it for years and years and years, but I never went to any events because I'd been to tech conferences in my early career and they were okay, but they weren't particularly great. And lots of things that we pride DjangoCons being about, well, these events weren't like that. And so I saw the Django Under the Hood events come out and I was like, oh, I could have gone to those, but they sold out quickly and I missed them. And then the year after, I think DjangoCon was in like Florence. I was like, I can go to Florence. Right? I really can. And I went. And the talks were, they were technical talks, sure. But the talks were on things like cognitive biases and diversity hiring and like all these just topics I hadn't even really considered, right?
Right.
And I literally think of it as changing my life. I was like, yes, I'm home. This is where I want to be. This is exactly what I want to engage in. And at the time, I was at an inflection point in my career. I was, I'd had a kind of 5 years or so of building mobile app front ends with Django back ends, and that was a nice niche. But at the time, it was getting harder and harder to maintain that. And I either had to specialize more on the mobile front ends or specialize more on the Django. And I remember going to that conference being like, well, which am I going to do? And it was very much the conference that made me say, no, I'm okay. I'll double down on Django. And yeah, it was literally life-changing. And I met all these people and I engaged more with the community. And every year it refreshes it. And every year you go and you see these folks, you're like, oh, how are you? And that is magic. And it's irreplaceable.
Yeah.
Is that where you gave the...
And you will?
Well, I just wanted to ask Carlton, did you give a talk at the first one, the Growing Old Gracefully? Or was that the...
No.
That was the next year? Was it also in Florence for some reason?
That was... that. Yeah. No, that was in Heidelberg the following year. But basically, I came away from DjangoCon EU 7 2017 being like, I've got to submit a talk for the next one. And I, you know.
And then was it 2018 when you gave the talk in Heidelberg, I guess? Because it would have been the spring, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to...
So I mean, this was my Growing Old Gracefully talk, which is my first talk.
6 years ago. Because I'll answer your question, Tim, but I've...
No worries.
Found Carlton because I saw that talk. So I probably because I was going through the videos and I emailed you, I believe. And so then DjangoCon 2018 US, my first one, I gave a talk. I sort of knew who Carlton was. And then he came up after the talk and said hi and had feedback. And then that, you know, here we are now. So, you know, it's always like...
And a great love was born. Yeah.
You never... I mean, Carlton will know this. Every year it's a big ask to go to a conference. Like it's a lot of time, it's money and stuff. And I can sort of talk myself out of it. But every time I go, all these good things happen. And it's often, after. You know, it's not, you know, I can't evaluate the conference based on how I feel, you know, the week after as we are now. It's like the weeks and months and getting to know people, and then, you know, just having a meal or coffee with someone later when you interact with them online, you know, they're a human being, right? So it just makes it a lot easier. You can understand, oh, they, yeah, maybe this is how they're thinking about things because you've had conversations about it, and you have a just a sense of them as a full person, not just this name out there that's helping or hindering what you want to do with Django or with code. So absolutely same experience for me. Like I've been to a PyCon, I've been to some tech conferences in San Francisco when I was out there, but nothing like a Django Con.
See, it's those comments that always make me worried about going to other conferences then, because like there's a couple that I know in like the conference chats group, like I would, if they're there and the organizers are there, I'm willing to go to those conferences because I have that bit of trust in them, and that's willing to spend the money and the time to go do it. But it took a lot for me to go to that first DjangoCon. Like it was really a decision like, nope, I am investing a lot of my career into this, and like, let's see what happens. But yeah, part of the question behind, or the reason behind that question was, do you both then feel, so you both agreed that like, hey, personally and community wise, like Django cons mean a lot. Do you feel like we accurately represent those, within the community? Like do we accurately reflect that importance within the community of like Django cons kind of keep things together moving forward?
I don't quite understand the concern. Like, yes, they're big things, right? And a lot of effort goes into them, a lot of promotion goes into them,
it's more of like, could we be doing more of really leaning into Django cons? Like if we know that they're important, and we know that this is where community members get together and they build that level of trust so we can have those difficult conversations. Like, I think it was the last episode you two were talking about the auth change and how we might be able to get a decision made at DjangoCon because we're gonna have a bunch of people, DjangoCon US, because we have a bunch of people in the room and we can kind of hash out a bunch of these differences and hopefully arrive at a solution that moves us forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, this is a common trend in these conferences, but I don't know if I think everyone within it, we all know that this is true, but are we actually actively marketing it and telling people like, hey, if you want to be a part of this, like you need to be here. Like you really should be here. If you really want to invest into the community, if you want to integrate yourself into the community. And then also making sure like the people that are in the community that we are trying to help support, like, are we helping them get to these?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you said the magic word marketing. And, you know, I just going to say, like, I mean, Jacob Kaplan-Moss gave a talk this year on what would the Django Software Foundation do with $1 million. And one of the big takeaways was having an executive director to do things like that fall through the cracks. You know, we could also do things like put the conferences on the homepage of Django Project, right? Like, we don't track the statistics, but I would venture that the number of people who see the news community section of the website is 0.something%. You know, that's why the newsletter exists. That's why the podcast exists. I would rather the newsletter be a Django newsletter. So maybe Jeff and I should push harder for that. Like, we've offered to run that for Django, but I think the reality is it's a lot of work and it's a lot of, you know, I think the ongoing volunteer commitments are difficult. That's why we have the fellows role, which I thought Natalia gave a really great talk about it this year. But yeah, marketing, shining the light on, you know, organizers. Like I didn't know that volunteers ran the first DjangoCon when I was there. I just like, oh, it's a conference. You know, I didn't realize it was like, nope, nobody's getting paid. It's just right. And then as you get into it, you start to see, and you know, however we can shine a light on the people who are making Django happen, the better. But I think it's easy, you know, it's running a conference, doing code, doing community, doing docs. You know, Sarah Boyce gave an amazing talk on accessibility features in Django 5.x, but we basically don't talk about them because by the time we've done everything involved, everyone's just exhausted, right? And so that last bit, that if we were a commercial enterprise or something, would get all the focus. Instead, all the focus is on the meat and not on the sizzle.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. Carlton, what's your take?
Yeah, no, exactly that. Like, there was this line, I think, from Emmerich years ago that Django is... It's a framework, but it's like an ecosystem around that framework, and then it's a community around that. And the biggest part is the community, and then the ecosystem, and then the framework is the least of it. But the framework is the only bit that we have on the website. And if you come along as a new Django dev, and you find the website, you manage to download it, you manage to go through the tutorial, you kind of don't even know that there's this ecosystem around it, right? We finally, Tim, you managed to get Django Debug Toolbar into the tutorial as that final step. As, oh, look, there are these third-party packages, and here's one. And look, there's a site that tells you about more. And that was a major change for Django to even hint that there are all these third-party packages. And could we perhaps hint that there was a community that was, in fact, the best bit about it?
This change is happening. I mean, this was the discussion Carlton and I had a little bit with the fellows, and then we had even further, we had dinner with them at the conference. I mean, the fact that there's people like you, Tim, right? There's people who are new to the community who are stepping into these major, major roles, because especially during COVID, there was definitely a changing of the guard. I mean, Carlton's spoken of, especially when he was fellow, some of the founding figures were stepping away a little bit, which makes sense, but there wasn't that next generation. And I feel like now we have it, or we have it more so. So change is happening, you know, where there's a ticket open to add user profile models, you know, all these, I think, because a lot of people who did so much work back in the day are slightly less involved, but can still inadvertently be a block on change. And so having these in-person conferences, seeing newer people come in, nobody wants to be a block, but we kind of need, you know, new ideas, new enthusiasm, you know, reconsider things. You know, so that forum post, my talk was on auth. I think most people, when they step back and think about it, like, yeah, why don't we have a template for login? So we have built-in login. I don't think it's controversial. It's just hasn't been done. And the whole auth thing was, there was a big, not fight, but discussion about it, you know, 12 years ago. And a lot of the people who were involved with it then have scar tissue from that. But
yeah,
you know,
it's hard. Natalia ran a code review session during the sprints because that's one of the needs right now of the fellows, is they need other experienced devs to come in and leave code reviews on things. And one of the PRs she pulled up was this changing the variable names to be more straightforward. And then there was a comment about performance, and immediately I'm just thinking, like, oh my goodness, like this is so difficult to try to reason about. And like, this is just one small change that isn't functional. It's literally, if you're reading this one function, this will help. But then you have to have how much time of investment over how many people. And that's just, it was mind boggling right then of how much time it goes into changing any bit of this code. And then when you make it much larger, of talking about models and like a core part of like the developer experience, yeah, I can see it's going to take a while.
One of the things that I've come increasingly to think, and it's not just a new thought, but it's been brewing for ages, but it came up at the end of my talks. Daniele asked me a question about getting new features into Django or something around that thing. He'd asked a very similar question when I gave the talk in Vigo, and I'd been reflecting on it, and I'd read a few essays, and this idea of having like the kernel Python, kernel Django, like the core bit that's small and tight and difficult to edit, and then around that we have got the great third party ecosystem, and that's all fine, except, again, nobody knows what to, you know, if you're a newcomer, how do you know what to install from the third-party ecosystem? And so Django's philosophy of batteries included sort of fades away and dies unless we find a way. Either we have to pile it all into Django, in which case it's hard to maintain and it can't be done because we can't make changes quickly to Django. Or we have to find a solution to this problem, this messaging problem about, hey, and if you need, I don't know, if you need rate limiting, there's option one and option two for rate limiting. If you need debug tooling, there's these options for debug tooling. If you need, I don't know, two-factor auth, there are these packages that are all worth looking into. We need to solve that problem so that a newcomer arriving at the Django project has some guidance and doesn't have to go and find, say, awesome Django on the GitHub repo. Like millions of people never even know about this awesome X projects, right? We can't be relying on that as our information distribution channel.
Yeah.
I mean, curation is tough, right? Like this is, I mean, when you're on the board, right? I mean, just historically, Django hasn't wanted to put its finger on anything, which makes a certain amount of sense, but has these drawbacks. And I think that's one of the blind sides of blind sides, whatever it is of of Django or these conferences is most of the people there are deeply involved with Django, and you can forget these, you know, how international it is, you know, these, you know, how off-putting some of these things are to newcomers, which people aren't trying to be, but our concerns as developers are different than new people, and we sort of lose that perspective over time.
I mean, it's also
and the counter argument. Sorry, there's a slight lag on the thing, but the counter argument was always, look, if we put in a list of packages to the docs and then they stop being maintained and we've got to constantly update that list, and that's not a trivial task either. So it's, I don't know exactly what the solution is, but there's the dilemma.
It's also like on the other side too, of you want to start contributing to that ecosystem. So you start writing blog posts, you start creating a package. How do you get the rest of everybody to know about it? Like if you're not in the in group, it's really hard for people to take you seriously, but to invest the time to research it and provide you like critical feedback and stuff. And so it's, there's challenges on both sides of it by not having a standard, like, hey, this is where you go for community, like third party. And like, this is where you go and submit your blog post for greater reach. And,
we can't rely on just me and Jeff randomly seeing something and making quick call
that
on
part
it.
Of like, after 2023, that DjangoCon, like I was like, I'm going to create Django Cairn. Like that's my idea. Like the central index of all the Django knowledge and like have some curation in it. And yeah, never got anywhere. But like that need is still there. There's other things I'm investing my time in right now.
Well, can we talk about Django Commons? Because I think that ties into some of this third party stuff. So give us the pitch.
So Django Commons, I think the working tagline is like the last place you'll need to transfer your project to. Theoretically, it's going to be, ideally we want it to be a home for Django and Python packages so that you know that package will have a good chance of always being maintained. Like we can't guarantee there's always going to be a maintainer for things because that's not our purview. But we're going to work our hardest to make sure that we're identifying packages that do need maintainers and help new people become maintainers and try to ease that logistical burden around maintaining software. So we've learned a lot from other solutions in the ecosystem. Like Jazzban has done a lot of things really well and continues to. So we've copied a lot of our organization from there. But the main difference was, we started with a group of people at the administrator level at the top to create that redundancy and create a success, like an immediate succession plan. So everything we have to do, we have to allow multiple people to have access to it. And by confronting that from the beginning, then it's easier to be like, all right, we can onboard somebody, we can remove someone. And then that idea then permeates down. I don't want to say community interview, but like kind of asked who would be interested. And I had 10 or 12 people respond. Yeah. Carlton was one of them. And we had like a list of responsibilities, and the four people that I ended up going with were the ones that had responded like yes to everything, wanting to be involved with the community, like responding to questions, reaching out to maintainers, reaching out to new people. Like I felt that at least in the initial phase, we need to be really strong on the community aspect of trying to maintain relationships and set up those organizational flows so that like later on people have then processes and workbooks or playbooks to be like, oh, we just need to go implement this now. And so that's kind of the idea behind it.
This episode of Django Chat is sponsored by TalkPython. Are you serious about getting better at Python and web development?
They have over 250 hours of courses, including their new HTMX plus Django course. Whether it's Django, Core Python, or tooling you want to learn, you can save 10% and get a great course at talkpython.fm/Django chat listeners with hyphens. Level up your Python and support the show. Level up your Python and support the show with a Talk Python course. The link's in your podcast player's show notes now.
I think that's probably quite wise in that we've historically had the hero does code by themselves approach, and that's worked very well, and that goes very so far. But it reaches its limits, and there's those difficulties about succession. That's the key. How do we hand off to the new generation? I've heard this topic come up just a billion times recently, but baking the community in from the start is exact reversing the framework ecosystem mm-hmm. community. It's like, well, let's go community ecosystem framework and see if that works better.
I mean, it's also the only way I can do community things. Like Django Cairn didn't go anywhere because I was the only one working on it. But then like the debug toolbar has been really fun to maintain with Matthias. We have a co-writing group, and then we meet every 6 months to just talk about the project. We've recently added a couple new maintainers. And then Django.space is so much more fun because we have a group of administrators. We now have some new session organizers. And then Django Commons, like it helps create that accountability, but then it also creates that connection. And then when you go to the Django Cons and see people's faces and you get to connect with them, and yeah, it's a lot of fun.
I think it also just gives you that outlet where when it's just you, it can easily become overwhelming. And at some point you think, I'll just stop for a little bit. And then you kind of stop. You know, I mean, this podcast with Carlton, the newsletter with Jeff, I mean, even the awesome Django repo, Jeff came in, I forget, like 2-3 years ago, because I was feeling overwhelmed. And, you know, when it's a non-paying, you know, community thing, it's very easy to just be like, throw your hands up. But if you just have that little bit of help, it gets you over the edge. Can we talk about Django not spaces, though? Because that, I feel like we've talked about some of the challenges here. This is this unbelievable success story that, came from, you know, this new generation of people who were like, we should do something, and actually did it. And now the third cohort just closed the picks for it, right?
Yep, we just sent out the announcements to people who were selected. That another DjangoCon product. Rachel and Dawn, I think it was after 2022, I think that was the one, whichever one Rachel was on the panel at the end, I think it was 2022. They realized like, hey, we should have something to help people get contributing, like start contributing. And from there, like it kind of grew. They added Sarah Abderman, and then Sarah Boyce and I joined a couple months after that. And then we had the little pilot program, and now, we're on session 3. Session 2, we had one new session organizer, Tushar Gupta. And this session, we now have 3 new session organizers helping. Priya Pawa, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Priya. And then Lillian Tran and Emmanuel Kachi. So it's really exciting to see people like go through the program, advance up and like take more and more ownership. And now being to the point like actually helping us out, because the organizers of Django Not Space like haven't stayed static. Like Dawn's now president of the PSF board. Sarah Abderman is on the DSF board. Sarah Boyce is a Django fellow. Like people keep moving. So like there was a vacuum growing. Like we need to pull people up and help out. And so it's really exciting to see that happen real time.
Well, and I think that's the life cycle built in, right? Where it's expected and celebrated that people can do different things, but still be involved. I mean, and even something as simple as the Sarah Boyce started on the Django newsletter. She was like, hey, because she was on the review and triage team at the time. Like, why don't we celebrate all the PRs? And we're like, that's a great idea. And she's like, and I'll do it for a while. So, you know, and that's turned into a regular feature in the newsletter and a bunch of the Django knots. And Raphael has done it a lot recently. And that's a perfect example where it's not just, and you know, it's like, yes, we should do it, and someone raises their hand and takes it on, and there's a way to have some continuity. So that's, I think a beautiful thing, right? If we could mimic that, like you can't, and this ties into Carlton's initial talk of growing old gracefully. Like you can't, it's unreasonable to expect the hero model, and it's off-putting initially, and it's off-putting long-term when people when that, you know, but the, it's almost like the burnout thing, right? It's like, it just builds up. And if there's no release, you just throw your hands up and walk away, you know, unless you're actually getting paid for it, which almost none of us are.
Yeah. I was going to say that getting paid for it opens a whole host of other issues. I don't want to go down that channel. Yeah. We'll ignore that.
Speaking of relatively unpaid things, can you talk about mentoring Google Summer of Code this past year? Because I feel like this is something that's really, really, really hidden within the Django community. I mean, I only knew about it from Carlton mentioning it because he was mentoring, and it's this long running thing that's had major changes and yet has basically no visibility as far as I'm concerned. So how did you get involved with that, and what was your experience like?
So I basically when I came back to helping maintain the debug toolbar, one of the first things Matthias and I talked about, or shortly after, was making the toolbar async compatible, because at the time, like, everything was moving async and we were fearing like, hey, we need to make sure like the developer tools are compatible with this new paradigm. And the toolbar is one of the most popular ones. Like, we need to make sure that we're not a bottleneck. And so we had came up with a project. We had done some work on it, but it kept stalling. And yeah, for the last 3 years, I've been submitting it as a project for Google Summer of Code. And this year we had, I think it was 2 submissions, and we ended up selecting Aman Pandies, and he did a fantastic job. We actually had, so it was on the mentor side, it was myself, Matthias Kestenholz, Daniel Harding, and then Elenita. And Elenita was a DjangoNaut from DjangoNaut Space Session 1, which was really exciting for me. And then, yeah, Aman had previously done a Google Summer of Code with Wagtail. And yeah, Thibaut recommended him. It went really well. It was fun to see his ideas and like pushing things forward, and like the actual direction of the project changed as well, because originally it was like the serializable version of it, which we still need to do, but Aman identified like, oh, we can't even run the toolbar in an async fashion, like we should start there. And so yeah, we moved over there. We got as many of the panels to be async compatible. Like, there's a couple that aren't, like profiling, we have to swap out what does that underneath the hood, because that's just not async compatible, or we have to it's a little tricky. Yeah, I'm really proud of Aman and the team's work on it. And I agree, like, it's another thing where we don't have the visibility into it, because like there were 4 really big projects. And I'm going to plug DjangoNaut Space once more. Shafia, she did the JSON. It was Sage Abdullah, his mentee. Shafia was a part of DjangoNaut Space. I believe it was actually our pilot program. So that's, yeah, it's really good to see like things just kind of come full circle and all the connections between things.
Well, and Sage gave a talk on this year, but that's one, right? Carlton, you and I sit back and, you know, smoke our virtual pipes, because he was, you know, he was just a college student who did Google Summer of Code, who became a core contributor on Wagtail, and now he's mentoring. And that's, you know, if not for those entryways, he wouldn't be part of the Django community, right? So yeah, that's a huge success story.
Yeah.
And you know, just from the code point of view as well, that the CrossDB JSON field, one example, the Redis back end, another example, these bits of code that need, you know, a dozen weeks to get done, they literally wouldn't exist if it wasn't for, you know, Google Summer of Code. And that's, and over the years, it's enabled a number of projects in the Django ecosystem.
I mean, imagine if we had Django Summer of Code. I mean, because the thing is, Google provides the visibility, but the funding is not super high.
So I would also push back the phrase of summer of coding, because,
well, yes, that, yeah,
it's, yeah, the hemisphere. I learned about that. But I can't change Google, but I can affect us. To the community and the marketing aspects, Mario, his keynote on community, I was talking to him after it, and he was saying like, why don't we celebrate the people who are involved in like the releases and stuff? And his example to me was, if you are on the craft services team, you will stay through that entire list of credits just to see your name on the screen at the very end. We could do something similar of like on each one of our release notes, or at least on the major releases, of having a credits, or at least crediting like the fellows that are part of it. And then eventually start adding the list of everyone who's contributed to that and like what their contributions were.
Yeah.
So that people rather than just saying like, hey, I've got these commits and linking to GitHub, like you can link to djangoproject.com and be like,
well, and we need someone to do that other than the fellows.
Well, no, this already exists, right? So like this just needs there is no just needs here, but this just needs a teeny bit more life force. Katie McLaughlin built a tool which goes not only pulls the GitHub commits and who the committers are, which is relatively easy to do, but it goes through track and it looks at who's commented on all the issues and it pulls those people out. And I think it even hits the forum API. You know, it goes through and it finds the wider set of contributors, you know, because lots of people just leave an insightful comment and that leads to the solution, but they don't get a credit because they're not a Git contributor for the, you know, they're not the Git committer for that. They've done all, right. Katie's done almost all of this work and it just needs like that little bit of life force to get it over the line. And we, you know, I was working with them to get it done and I failed and, you know, I ran out of life force and it never happened for, I don't know, 4.2, but the tooling, it's there, it exists and it's ripe to be picked up, and we could so very well create something like this, which is much richer than just a list of the Git committers. Much richer.
Yeah, I don't doubt that we have things like partially done, and like that. I'm not saying like anyone here has to go do that. It's also throwing things out there because someone might be listening, like, oh, I could do that, and then even if you can't do it,
Should someone email Katie and say, can I pick that up? Is that the next step?
What do you think? We should do something along those lines. Hey, you know, because Katie's got this tool. It's
right,
so
it's like
close.
A meeting. Like, we can't just complain. We have to like end with action items and be like, and you do this, and you do this, you do this, and then.
I don't want more action items. That's not what I was told.
No,
coming
but
out
I know,
this.
I know. We don't have action items. We want a clear path, right? Because you can only have the same discussion so many times without saying, okay, let's just identify what a solution would look like.
I can't commit Katie, but I can commit myself. So if somebody listening wants to help pick that project up, ping me and I will communicate with Katie and see if we can pick up something in that domain, because it needs to be, it's so close. And it was, you know, a couple of years ago and life was different then. Let's try now.
But I don't think it has to, like the point I'm trying to make here, now the new point I'm trying to make is, like, it doesn't have to be the whole solution that you implement either. Like, you can do half a solution or, like, just do, like, what the front end would look like and be like, I need help populating this.
Yeah.
And once you've already invested that time, someone's more willing to come in and say, like, oh, I can help you with that. Like, we can just do this.
Yeah, no, I think that was perhaps our mistake, is we had the list of Git contributors and then we tried to do that bit more. But it was like, we should have shipped.
Yeah. That's one of the things I learned being on Django Not Space is, like, you got to... The public marketing of celebrations is such a great way to like raise awareness. It's literally a cheat code that, you know, that I found, or that we found. I learned from everybody else.
I think we need the just working group, right? Let's just have a list of just, or maybe it could just be an open source repo. No, but I'm not totally joking, because there are all these things that are so close. If only. Yes, Carlton.
Well, no, if only, yeah. So there's a way of rephrasing just is Seth Godin, who's the marketer. He has a mental exercise, which is ask yourself if only. So, you know, when you've got if only this, then, and you keep just saying if only, and then that's the job list, right? If you can knock off the if onlys, then you achieve what it's a powerful
maybe
exercise.
It's a forum section. I mean, we can't just dump everything on the forum, but I'm excited to see the forum seems to be coming into its own the last year or two. I mean, because I think Andrew Godwin started up, or someone I think started up a number of years ago, just because the developers list on Google, I mean, couldn't be more off-putting to a younger person or a newcomer. I mean, not the content, but just the whole format. And it's just like, it just shrieks of like, yeah, not what Django really is. I won't, you know. So anyways, that's
good choice.
Anyway, yeah. The forum. No, today I was looking, a thing that I posted 18 months ago came up and I was able to find my post really quickly. Then there was a related issue that Tim was working on. I was able to find that in a single shot with the search. Whereas I, as a fellow, used to have to spend time on the Django developers mailing list, searching the history to find the relevant threads. And every single time it's 20 minutes of scrolling, you know, it's just... Oh, it's a life
soul sucking.
It really is. You know, forum versus email. Yeah, I understand the oldies like email, but seriously, the search and the filtering and the threading and these things, these are you know, worth any disruption you get from not having an email interface. Anyway.
Can we talk about your day job, Tim?
Yeah.
Or what were you going to ask, Carlton?
You give off all these vibes of being like some sort of really senior engineer. And I'm just like, what is it you do? What's your gig?
Learn from a bunch of mistakes that I've made myself.
Yeah, that's cool. That's what it's called.
No, I work for a company. Yeah. I work for a company called Aspire EDU. We do education analytics. We don't do data science. Like that. I feel like that's relevant here. We're a really small company. I think we have 9 people, and then 3 of us are on the software side of things. And yeah, I contracted with this company for a while, like half time for a number of years. And then about 2.5 years ago now, I was brought on full time. It's an interesting project. So we run Django, Celery, Postgres, and then we have RabbitMQ and Redis. But like we do everything on platform as a service or software as a service. So we don't run any of our own hardware. We don't use AWS. We run on Heroku. We have Redis Labs. We have Cloud AMQP, Crunchy Data. We do have some S3 AWS stuff for like S3 and backups and stuff, but. So we do all that because none of us are all that great at DevOps work, and there's enough work elsewhere that we're just trying to ease the developer experience and just kind of work on what we're focused on. It's an interesting project. We have, I think the last time I counted, over 200 models now. We got some tables in the 2 billion row mark, so we can hit some. So we don't have a lot of usage on the web app. It's more of the nightly process to capture data. We have these massive Celery signatures that run and have to hit all these endpoints to capture data, determine like what these differences are. And we're working on one of the things I'd really like to do is instead of capturing all the data every night, some of these LMSs, they offer the ability to listen to like an event queue, but then like that then introduce new problems. Sorry, we're going to go real deep on this one particular problem. So like if you have an assignment and you have the due date set at midnight and we're scheduled to capture data at midnight, or even if you set like due date at 1 a.m., you then run into this problem where all the submissions are most likely going to occur in that last hour.
It's like ticket sales or something that you get this spike. Yeah.
So then the concern is like, all right, so as we're capturing like nature of our product, we have a snapshot thing. So like you can go back in time and show data at this certain date. We need to cut off that date at some point. So now we're trying to deal with, all right, if we have this backlog of submissions that can accumulate and we don't know when we're going to get them, like there's no indication like, oh, you've gotten all the submissions, like you're good now. So now we're trying to figure out like, how do we do a cutoff point, but then continue to allow more submissions and put those before the cutoff points so that you can properly dictate things. Like as you just keep growing, it's like, all right, next problem up, and then try to like patch things together and make it all work. And yeah, so that's one of the things I really like working with like the same project for 8-9 years is, you know, all the gnarly bits, and like you can be really effective really quickly. You can get deep into some weird problems.
Can I ask about, so you mentioned Redis, so one of the platinum sponsors at the conference was Valky. For those who don't know, Redis has whatever. It's sort of a longer story, but basically there's a license for it now, and a group is, as I understand it, trying to control Redis itself. So there's a fork, one of which is Valky, which is supported by AWS and some other places that want to keep it open source. I'm curious, working on a like real world project, how does that filter to the decision making? Like, are there these red lines when you say we switch, or like, you know, what does that look like in the real world?
Yeah. So for me, it's more of do they have a managed offering that we can just swap it one for one and have everything that we have elsewhere? Mm. Like if I have to go and set something up in AWS and manage the user accounts, and because of another nature of how we scaled, we have like different app, what we call backends. It's not super simple. So like there's a major cost to us switching over to things. It's like once that exists, doing the price analysis, like the cost analysis on it, if it's going to make sense for us to spend time on it, because it's going to require my time and I could be spending that elsewhere. So like it's a lot of forward momentum elsewhere that would prevent us from going back and like, all right, let's change this one other thing real quick.
Right. I mean, that's the arbitrage, I guess, of the business opportunity is squeezing that pain point. But it is, It's interesting to see, right? I mean, a little bit of the history, right? Where it was open source for forever and then the maintainer sold it and has stepped away and, you know, selling open source. And this has happened a couple of times, but I mean, Carlton's made this point. I mean, Redis it's really a pillar of the web, right? So you sort of can't, it's hard to think of that being in private control. I guess it's, interesting
I'm sure
to see.
Eventually. We're still doing Heroku. So like, we're clearly a very slow organization to change things. So
I'm all about Heroku. I don't think there's anything wrong with throwing money at DevOps. Like if you're not DevOps people and you can throw money on it, like do it. Like it's a whole separate beast, right? It's separate from what you need. And until it becomes prohibitive, like why not? I'm very pro. And you're doing billions, you're doing real scale, right? Like you manage services, you're using Crunchy, we don't need to be heroes doing everything ourselves because no one does a good job of that. Don't apologize. I'm all about services personally. Carlton, you agree with me.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, this line about Heroku, like, what did Heroku do? Like, they stopped evolving because they got bought by Salesforce. So that was a bit of a shame. But they got rid of the free tier. And
from the beginning.
I can never be like, oh, you got rid of your free tier? I'll boo to you. Like, free tiers are not good business, right? Like, they don't make any sense. So I'm not so worried that Heroku got rid of their free tier. I mean, that they stopped evolving is more of a shame, I think, overall. But their product was good and it hasn't gone anywhere, right? Salesforce kept it running.
Yeah, it actually has been pretty stable for, like, there was a good year where they had a bunch of outages where it became a real, like, that's the reason we moved to Crunchy Data is, like, if we want to move off Heroku, we need to get the database off first so that we can just swap out the application layer. And so that was a major hurdle. But yeah, Crunchy Data and Crunchy Bridge, they helped us out tremendously with that. And then, we haven't had the need to switch out Heroku yet. It's been running well. Yeah.
But that, I mean,
usually,
when Craig was on the podcast, he was making that point that this federated model of managed services, it makes sense, right? It's sort of amazing that Heroku was able to combine everything at scale, but like they're all separate problems, right? Managing the database, managing this, managing that. So, and all of us kind of just want to build web apps and not worry about those things, unless you're at a huge company and then you can just only worry about those things. But it's not what interests me personally.
Yeah. It is a challenge to like document all these things and like keep it straightforward of when somebody new comes on, because we don't have a ton of turnover, but then like trying to onboard somebody onto like all these services and I could see how it'd be a lot easier to just have like a massive server somewhere running everything there. And you can just give someone a little bit of access and stuff.
But then someone comes in and buys that company and then you're.
I mean, rolling your own.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, Carlton, I have to say, so you wrote something the other day about reference the money stack.
So I managed to draft. This was my newsletter for the month was Stack Report newsletter for the month was about avoiding R&D in production. I managed to draft it on the plane home from DjangoCon. Actually, I was like, right, been taken away. So I managed to block out the major points. But yeah, I mean, the core idea there is, stick to the boring tech, the money stack, as Craig called it. You know, the Django's, the Postgres's, the Python, the mature. Sensible technologies, because their failure modes are known, for want of a better word. The difficulties you're going to have are known, and your ability to plan around the risk that involves is known. And so you can actually plan it. Whereas if you pick up new and shiny tech, it promises it's going to be faster, but who knows what goes wrong in the worst case? It could be multiples of time lost. So anyway, the piece was about that. But I'm a massive believer. I think. Yeah, I'm all for doing research and development, just not on your production stack.
Unless it's UV, right? Is that seems to be the next thing that...
Don't get me started. We've got Hinnick coming on in a few weeks. We'll save it for then.
Yeah. He just did a video. We should link to that. He just did an all-in-one video, I think, making the case. I'm the same way. Like, and it's sort of like what you were saying earlier, Tim, about like, you know, with Redis, like you don't need to change for the sake of change. And it's fun to try things out, especially on side things, but like on a real world project, like you don't want change unless you have to have it or unless it's clearly cheaper or better. And often things aren't quite so simple. What haven't we asked you, Tim? We've covered some stuff. I know we haven't delved into your origin story. We can do that. Or are there any other projects you want to call out? What would you like?
I think we've covered most of them. I mean, yeah, I don't really know.
Well, let me ask you then. So two questions. So one is, what is your magic wand? You know, we just come out of DjangoCon. I know you're working on a bunch of things, but what is something you're not directly involved with that you'd like to just change about Django?
Not directly involved. So
you're directly involved in a lot. It's okay. It could be something you're directly involved with. Go ahead. Take the wand.
I think I'm going to go back to the earlier point of we were talking about, you have the community, then the ecosystem, and then Django. And like, I'd really like for us to have solved the community aspect of like, new person comes in and like, here's everything you need to know and like where to go to find ABC and then XYZ. And if you want to contribute RST, like, cool. Like, this is where you go and this is how you do that. Like, I think having that solved would unlock a lot of new people getting involved and then just kind of make everything else easier. And also I'm really big on community. And so that would be, it'd be really fun to see.
And it might even be, we do have a /community page on the Django project site. And, you know, it's been updated a little bit. Maybe it's a matter of some love and care there, because it certainly could be, could be improved. And
like, in my mind, it's more than just having static site. Like, this is going to require people effort of maintaining it and like communicating out and welcoming people in and making them feel like, hey, yeah, you're seen. And because it's more than just saying like, hey, here's the open door. Like, you actually have to like step out and be like, hey, come in. Like, this is where you belong.
Right.
So I think taking more of an active, I think in my version of it, it would be a more of an active role rather than us saying like, yeah, we're really welcome. Like, come on in.
The problem with
which, we don't have the people to do all that. So
the problem with the contributing guide was always that it's like 5,000 word essay that you've got to start and read. And it's like, oh, that's quite a steep cliff face to climb up. I just wanted to sort of help out a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, we could also have, you know, character archetypes of like, oh, so like, how do you envision yourself being in the Django community? Like, do you want to be a contributor? Like, okay, like, this is a tough path. Like, this is our contributing guide. And like, here, like, you can go apply it to Django Not Space. And like, if there's any meetups, like, these are the ones you want to go talk to or go participate in, like, submit a talk. And then you want to be a community organizer, like, all right, where are you located? Like, here's DjangoCon US, DjangoCon Europe, DjangoCon Africa. Look up all the various Django user groups, Python user groups, like, go help them organize. And like, kind of provide those different ways for people to learn, like, to see themselves in our community and then provide a pathway for them to go implement it. So like, again, these are all ideas and we just need somebody to go implement them. And that was a joke.
if only someone would implement them. I mean, just looking at the homepage for Django Project, you know, down at the bottom, stay in the loop. We don't mention the forum there, even though I would venture that most of the mindshare has moved to the forum. Instead, it links to these Google developer lists, which it's like a fire hose of stuff. It's not, you know, it's not that casual. You know, it's not what the newsletter is, for example, the Django News newsletter. It's not this monthly thing. Like, that could be, and again, Carlton and I were discussing at the conference because Paolo was there and we're remembering that his consultancy had spent a lot of time mocking up potential changes to the look and feel of the site and it didn't quite get over the line. But I think one of my, you know, wands to wave would definitely be to have the website look as modern as Django itself is. Anyway, so what's next for you, Tim? So you're involved with all these things. Oh, Carlton has a question, but...
Well, no. Go on, you do that.
Yeah, like
so
you.
What's next?
Yeah, like how do you maintain what you're doing? Okay. Are there other things? Are you looking to hand off certain things? Like what? Yeah, what comes next?
Yeah, all of the above. So I'm going to run through a couple of things. Like if people want to help with Django Commons, like if you want to move a package there, please do. We're open to it. If you want to help maintain another package, we're working on getting those, but definitely join, participate in the discussion groups. Regarding DjangoCon US, like we've just finished up the conference for this year, but we are looking for organizers for next year. We're also always open to new venue proposals, and it doesn't have to be for 2025. Like if you want to submit something for 2027 and take us to a different place, please submit. Another thing my fellow board members mentioned to me, people can donate to us. Like we had a tough year this year with sponsors. I don't know if you all saw, like we didn't have a single, I think it was platinum or diamond.
Diamond.
I was not on the sponsors.
Diamonds,
team.
I think.
Diamond, yeah. People can donate. That's always great. And then Django Not Space, yeah, we'll probably have the next session coming up sometime in 2025, early in the year. And then hopefully, maybe, I'd like to do like these streams of doing code reviews for Django to kind of like help other people see like what goes into it. I don't know. After watching Natalia go through the one, I'm like, oh boy, this is gonna be challenging. But so that's the next idea, to try to, because Django Not Space, we're really good at having like the small group of people and getting them in, but there's so many more people that apply that don't get accepted. And some of those people just need to be told, like, be held a little bit accountable of just, I want to talk to somebody once a month. And I think we can do that. We just need to create some time for folks. And with the new session organizers, that kind of frees. I'm taking some time away for this session to maybe try that. So we'll see how that turns out. I think I covered everything.
Yeah, I had the Django Con, Django Commons, and Django Norse.
Yes. Yep.
And then you also find time to blog on your personal site too. We haven't even mentioned that.
Yeah, I try. Yeah.
What's the name of it again?
Better-simple.com. Yeah. It's the last one I had. I've been trying to keep up with one per month. And yeah, the last one, I think it was after I said goodnight to both of you and a couple other people. And I had a different blog post in mind. And then this one hit me and I was like, yep, I'm going to go ahead and write this about how Django and Django kind of like, I can see there's a group of people that really want to participate and like they're starting to organize at like the grassroots level. And yeah, we just need to connect that to pathways to really just enable them to have more to affect change a little bit better.
Well, just speaking of that, we should mention there's this autumn, there's going to be both the board elections, which nominations are open for now. And then the steering council is likely to have an election, you know, very soon, it seems. Which is, you know, for the technical direction of Django, I guess, whereas the board is more for running the DSF and looking after Django from a kind of organizational perspective. So do you think we can encourage this head swell of grassroots organization to apply for those positions and to take up those leadership roles?
I think so. It's a challenge. Like the thing I've learned about organizing, especially at like the top part, is a lot of it's not well defined. Like I know, Will, you have a post of like what it was like to be a DSF board member. But how much of it still is, oh, this new thing cropped up, like we need to spend this month on this and you work on that. And you don't ever get back to the thing that you wanted to do originally. And like, it's hard to define that. And so much of it is problem comes up, take the initiative and like, go solve it. And then to the point of where could this all go in the future and making sure that we don't have those roadblocks in the way. And so like communicating that to people is difficult. And then there's when you sometimes phrase it that way, then it's you're putting people off because like that's a little scary. So I think going and messaging people and be like, hey, I think you'd be good at this for this reason, but be aware like these are the challenges you're going to face, and but this is why I think you're good for it.
Well, it sounds like an executive director kind of thing. I mean, Deb Nicholson came on. Well, no, I mean, because I think, I mean, you know, this is a fundamental issue, is that a board is meant to be a board, not to be a board and do all the work. And
oh, for sure.
We
yeah.
need, you know, we have working groups that do great things, but to, you know, to bring in this, you know, two dozen more people who, if for a little accountability and guidance, would be super involved. There isn't really a mechanism for that just yet. Like, so yeah, but it would be, you know, it'd be great to have some sort of tiers, some sort of public recognition, which is important to people, but then
yeah, all these I other was things. Really meaning more of like, if you're in the community and you want to make sure that we have qualified people, like good people on these two boards or groups, like you can send these messages to people of who you think would be really good. Once they get on there, like, yeah, you're 100% right. Like we do need an executive director. And,
but I mean, I think we can have more public facing than just the steering council and the board, because there are all these other groups that, I mean, internationalization yes. team that just work in the shadows and suffer a little bit from that.
Yeah. But I mean, we've got the Feature Friday post. Like, now that we have that going, like, it's not a far stretch then to say, like, all right, let's highlight this group, and then stretch from there, like, all right, let's highlight this new person. And before you know it, like, we have a really good marketing team, like, exposing our community and helping people see where they can get involved. Yeah. I don't know. I think things are looking up. Like, I know there's some flux always, but yeah, I'm pretty positive about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think all of us involved are, and when you reach a boiling point, step away, just raise your hand. And if someone can come in, you can recirculate and reemerge elsewhere in the community. Anyways, I think we could keep talking, Tim. I wish we could, but we're at about an hour. So I think that's the cutoff point. But thank you for coming on. We should have had you on a while ago. And thank you for all the work that you've done. And as Carlton said, you really just came in like a tornado and are making all these great things happen that, it's very exciting and gratifying to see.
Everything I do is a team effort. Every single aspect.
No, yeah. Of course, it's not just you, but it is also you.
I don't know, but sure.
So we'll have links to everything in the show notes. And thanks again, Tim, for making the time.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thank you both.
Join us next time.
All right, we'll see everyone next time. Bye-bye.
This episode was brought to you by TalkPython and the new HTMX plus Django courses.